This is Jason Q, Citizen and Friends, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, welcome to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. My name's Craig Schultz. I'm the host of the show while Jason's got upcoming election duties. And we have been with some phenomenal guests over the last few weeks. We've had independent media guru Jamie McIntyre. We've had a number of people talk about freedom and building parallel societies. Today, we're actually turning to the election and we have got a Senate candidate from the Great Australia Party, Jason Miles, joining us today. So welcome to the show, Jason.
Thank you, Craig. Thanks for having me on the show. Excited to be here, mate.
Great. And I'm looking forward to having this conversation. There's so much to learn. We're going to make this educational, but just if you can spend a couple of minutes sharing a bit about your story leading up to why you made the decision to join politics.
Okay. So I won't tell you where I'm from. I'm an Aussie boy though. I finished work in 2018. I embarked on 2,000 hours worth of cancer research. I've been a wellness coach since about 2012, 2013, thereabouts, but my wife had a pretty aggressive tumour, so I gave up work and studied full-time. That led us down many paths, also opened up many rabbit holes about the tentacles and the far reaching of the pharmaceutical industry. Not all bad, mind you. I'm just saying there's something that needs to be questioned there. And I spent, literally 2 and a bit years researching full-time, coming up with different options for her. And then we ended up in San Diego in March 2020, right in the height of COVID when the storm basically began, and we were there for 19 days. Met some incredible people my wife was going through treatment with. I'm talking amazing doctors, specialists, the whole thing. They explained a whole world to me that I'd never, ever witnessed before. I'd always had a perception of global corruption and whatever else, and they set me on a merry course, went down a few paths there, and that led me to a point where I went, you know what, I can't sit back and see what's happening to Australia anymore. I started exploring, I started learning, educating myself around truth, and that led me to where I am today, which was to run for a political party called the Great Australian Party.
And look, I've been on a similar sort of journey, but quite different, and exploring truth and big pharma and all these different, I guess, overreaching bodies that are infiltrating our country in many instances at the moment. What was the thing for you, Great Australian Party? There's so many options out there. What was the big driving force to join them? And if you want to just spend a few minutes just sharing a bit about what they stand for.
Yeah, I'd love to. So when I decided to run, I didn't know a lot about constitutional law or anything. To be honest, the Constitution was removed from our schools in 75 or something, so I didn't really know much about it. I was pretty much an apathetic Aussie, just don't bother me, stay out of my life and I'll be fine. And then when I decided to, enough was enough, when I researched and I just discovered corruption after corruption, lie after lie, deceit after deceit, I decided to do something. A mate of mine, Jason Reynolds, said to me, mate, you've got all this energy, you've got all this passion, you're really good behind the keyboard, but why don't you actually do something about it? And I really do love his honesty for that. So I started looking at political parties. I thought maybe I could run as an independent. No point doing that. Didn't know how to. So I thought I'll jump on with someone that did. And I researched at least half a dozen, maybe if not nine, political parties. And I came up with one guy named Rod Cullerton, and I remember watching the 60 Minutes interview with Rod in 2015, I think it was, about the farms and how he'd actually saved farms from takeover, so foreign takeover, and the banks and what ANZ Bank in particular had done, and how I think we're losing one farmer a week to suicide because of this disgusting act and what they were trying to do by taking over our land. So that I already kind of had an inkling of who he was. Didn't know him really that well because Sunday night 60 Minutes used to be my staple until I stopped watching mainstream. And then I listened to his maiden speech in 2017. He was elected as a senator with Pauline Hanson, One Nation. And I cried. I got to say, I absolutely cried. It just absolutely blew me away. The passion from the guy, but the fact that this guy is on the front line and what he did in a very short amount of time in the parliament was quite powerful. He put together this thing called Motion 163, and I highly recommend everyone research 163. Anyway, so for me, it was a matter of connecting with Rod. I did that. We had about 8 hours worth of interviews with him and a few others, and I agreed that I would run, but only on the condition, I was living in Victoria at the time, only on the condition if I could run up here in Queensland because I wanted to come back home to see my mum and family and my wife, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, and many people don't quite understand what the Constitution is. and you know, it's probably a big, long, deep 1 hour conversation in its own right. You mentioned there that we'd lost the constitution or been up replaced or taken away. Do you want to just explain that in a little bit more detail so the audience can actually understand? Because it will be an important part for our upcoming election.
Okay. Well, prior to 1900, Australia was colonies. We were colonies, right? That's what we did. New South Wales was a colony, Victoria, all the states as we know them today were colonies. And the people were getting sick of paying taxes and tariffs just to, you know, and to move across borders and all the rest of it. So come Federation, what they did in 1890 is some clever guys and women got together and they decided, well, why don't we ask the people if they actually want to become one colony, which is called Australia. Therefore, no borders. And the only border that would exist would be our nautical border offshore, right? Our own protective borders. So therefore, borders would no longer exist. So we federated. And when we federated, our forefathers and mothers wrote the Australian Constitution. Now, the Australian Constitution, the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act is a 1900 Act. It's an act out of the UK law because we are a Commonwealth country. And so that was born out of that. What has happened over the years? So politicians don't like the Constitution because it is your protection. It is your protection from tyrannical government and from socialist politicians that want to do things their way and follow different agendas. Yet Australia is all about democracy. So the Constitution was written to make sure that your freedoms and protections were always upheld. Now, if you go forward to where we are today, we are back pre-Federation because the states are running the show. And that's exactly the thing that Federation stopped. And yet here we are today. So that was raised basically in 90s. There's a series of things along the way that happened. The Labor and Liberal Party are equally as guilty of this. They certainly do not want the people to be, we should run the country. We are the government, right? The politicians pass, or the parliament passes laws for the better of us. We don't serve them, they serve us. And that's been forgotten. And even in the hierarchy of order where we sit, you know, whatever your religious beliefs, there's God, there's the people, there's government, there's entities. That's the way it should work. Well, right now, God's gone. They've almost kicked religion out of the country. You've got the government and you've got entities and you've got the people. So we're sitting at the bottom of the food chain. And probably the best example I can give you is in Queensland, in the state of Queensland, you have five levels of protection. Every state has these, but I want to signal Queensland here. I want to call them out. You've got five levels of protection. You've got what you call the lower house, the legislative assembly. You've got the legislative council. So the lower house and the upper house, right? Because you don't want one government controlling because that would be tyrannical. You then have a governor who is meant to be for the people. So that's your third level. You've got the lower house, the upper house, the governor. You've got an adjudicator, so the judicial system, right? So they've got to rule on law and there's got to be a separation of power. So you have that with the upper house and the governor. So tick, no dramas. And then the fifth one is you have a constitution. Well, let me tell the people of Queensland this. In 1915, the Labor government said, well, we want to get rid of the upper house because we want to dominate. We want to do things our way. We just want to, you know, we don't want to have to worry about the people. We'll just do it our way. And so they tried with all their might to kick the upper house out. Now it failed. In 2015, in 2016, they tried several times, it failed. In 1917, we had a referendum in Queensland. And then, right to say, the people got to decide. And guess what the people said? We do not want to abolish the upper house because we don't trust politicians. So keep the upper house because it is that level of protection. 1922, the governor went on holidays for a month, and I think the Speaker of the House acted as governor. And guess what happened? He handpicked 30 senators to go into the chamber and vote it out. And therefore, in 1922, despite what the will of the people was, which is what they're meant to do, we lost our upper house in Queensland. Now, there's one of your protections gone straight away. In 1987, the Premier of Queensland at the time, Micah Hearn, he cancelled the letters patent, the authority, the protection of the people, of the Governor General. He cancelled it. He has no right to do that. He can't do it. It's unlawful. He did it. There's two gone. And then they've changed our constitution twice at no regard to the people and without asking the people at all. There's three gone, knocked out. So what are you left with? You're left with a lower house and you're left with a judicial system. And right now in Queensland, whoever runs the show on the day runs the judicial system, because all judges have to do is rule on law. And if you're the only power in the parliament, there's no one opposing you, you can write whatever laws you like, because all the judge has to do is just rule on law. And this is the predicament we see Australia in today. It is disgraceful. I hope that explains it.
Yeah, no, well said. And just I guess we'll try and bring some practicality into here as well. But you talk about moving away from the constitution. It might not be the right language, but Australians, to my understanding, are supposed to vote at a referendum for these powers to be introduced. Do you want to just elaborate a little bit on this hasn't happened over the last period of time, which is why people like yourself and Rod are really fighting to restore our constitution? Because at the moment, you would say that we are run nearly as a republic. Again, that might not be the right word, but this Australia Act.
That's spot on. That's pretty accurate. We've become a socialist country. So the idea of changing the constitution, so the 1900 Commonwealth Constitution Act says the only way you can change our constitution, not the first nine clauses, I'll park those for a minute if I may, but 1 to 128 makes up the document, right? There's 1 to 128 clauses in the constitution. The Commonwealth of Australia Constitution. The only way that can be changed is by a referendum, if the people say so. That's it, right? The crazy thing about the system, and one I probably don't agree with, is politicians get to write the questions. And politicians are typically dishonest. They're deceitful. So they put a lot of spin on the questions. But we've had 44 questions put to the Australian people since Federation, since 1900. 8 have passed. What may that tell you for a start? That we don't agree with what politicians are trying to do and where they're taking the country. Now, some of those were good. Some of those were certainly beneficial. But what we said in 1999, Craig, was yet again, we do not want to become a republic and we do not want a head of state. Have a look what's happening in America right now. Just have a look at the divide between the states over there. Now, I'm not saying it's always a bad thing. If you get a good president, he or she can probably control that. But here in Australia, we don't have that. And what we've lost now is we're running like a republic, yet we're meant to be under the Commonwealth. Scott Morrison has basically given up his powers and handed it over to the premiers in the National Cabinet. Absolutely national. National Cabinet has no legislative or constitutional power at all, yet they're making the decisions about what happens in each state, lockdowns, mandates, you know, vaccines, whatever it might be. They're making their decisions to suit themselves, not the people of Australia. And the more you move away from the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act, which is what law, so think about this, those 128 clauses, when laws are written, they're meant to be pursuant to that. So you can't go beyond what our forefathers wrote. But what they did was create the Australia Act, dishonestly, over about a five-year period, probably a little bit more, and they created the Australia Act, which basically removed the premiers from working with the Constitution. And that's exactly what's happened today.
Yeah, and while we're talking about this, and we want to move into talking about understanding the voting system in this session as well, because I myself are very guilty as a first-time voter. Like, I voted along the journey, but completely plugged into the system, follow the narrative. And what we need to do as people that do want to restore our democracy is actually understand a bit more about how to vote, preferences, and how do we get more people in to cause or bring this more, I guess if a country's hard to govern, it's, you know, a good situation to be in if you want a democracy. So we've got an ad break coming up right now at TNT Radio. After the break, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about how to vote and learn more about the voting system.
You should hear what George Eliason is talking about.
What would have happened in Donbass if Russia hesitated or waited a few days longer to start the military action?
We would not have an opportunity to talk right now. And for that moment, there would be many people would die. They would be killed by Ukrainian army.
Now, if Russia had to respond to that kind of attack instead of stopping it ahead of time, what would have been the outcome for Donbass?
So now what we see now is really the answer of Russia to what Ukraine had been done for 8 years. As we always say, Ukraine unleashed the war and was using the banned means and methods of warfare.
Aggression
towards their own people.
George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
We're at a party. Three little kids were playing in the pool, all under five. Adults were busy talking. Glanced over, noticed a little one underwater. I think she needs help. That's how easily something can happen. It only takes a few seconds. Don't worry, the party had a happy ending. But we need to remember, fence the pool, shut the gate. Teach your kids to swim, it's great. Supervise, watch your mate, and learn how to resuscitate. I'm Laurie Lawrence. Kids alive, do the five.
I came to clean and noticed there was no food in the house.
She told me her sister just forgot to pay a few bills.
He was in for his monthly trim. When I noticed the bruising.
Is there anything I can do?
Thousands of older Australians experience elder abuse every year. If you're concerned about someone you know, you don't need to have all the answers. Call 1800 Elder Help for free confidential information and support.
The new communism is COVIDism. The voice of freedom is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q Citizen and Friends. We've been with Jason Miles talking about the history of politics and our constitution. And we're going to move into a little bit more about the voting system in this part of the session. But I want to just mention one thing before we go into that, because we are going into this election, and I think Clive Palmer put up on his Facebook recently today that Labor and Liberal are potentially going to be preferencing each other in the upcoming election, which to me is an announcement that it's one party, a Lib-Lab party. So we're going to talk about how to vote and preferences. So, Jason, how does the whole parliament system work? You know, for someone like me who's a first-time voter, what is the upper house? What is the Senate? What is the lower house? Just some of these basic things so people get their head around, so when they do go to the voting booth, actually understand what they're looking at on those voting cards.
Okay, thank you. I'll do that. I guess just to respond to your comment, if anyone ever needs proof that we are literally under Labor, which is one government, you know, same bird, two wings, there's your evidence. They are both one of the same. They have no interest in Australia. So let me just go a bit about voting in Australia. So we have what we call a bicameral system in Australia, and that means you've got two houses in the parliament. I'm using my hands here, which probably isn't working because we're on radio, but you've got a lower house, which is called the House of Representatives, and you've got an upper house, which is called the Senate. I'm talking federal, right, which is where we're going in on the 21st of May. You've got the lower house, the House of Representatives, and the upper house, the Senate. The lower house is where government is formed. There's 151 electoral areas around Australia, right? So, and they're defined by population. So in the state of New South Wales, I think they have 47 what they call electoral seats, right? And roughly there's about 100,000 people that live in each electorate, in each electoral area. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yep. So the lower house. So when you vote on Saturday the 21st, they'll focus mostly on the lower house because that is where government of the day is formed. So there's 151 seats all around Australia. And again, the more populated the state, the more seats you have. So Queensland will have 30, Victoria will probably have 40-something, New South Wales will have the most because it's got the most people. So whoever gets to 76 first, whichever political party gets to 76 first, because that's more than 50% of the quota required, so 151 divided by 2, 75 and a half, 76. Whoever gets 76 seats first wins them around Australia, that's it. They've won the election. To win a seat, so for example, I live in the seat of Longman up here north of Brisbane, and if I were to be running in the lower house election, which I'm not, I'm running in the upper house in the Senate, then I would need 50% of the votes plus one vote. So if there's, and for simple calculation, if there's 100,000 people exactly, I would need 50,000 and one vote, and I would be declared the winner. That's the way the lower house works. I'll talk about preferencing in a minute. The upper house. So what you have, it's the Senate. It is the House of Review. The Senate. Each state has 12 senators representing it. So, and I'll look at Queensland for a moment because I live here. So we have 30 federal MPs, what they call members for parliament, in the lower house. And roughly, you have roughly two lower house members for every senator. So each state has 12 senators. Tasmania gets a bit of a free kick because it's not a big population down there. But anyway, and the territories have two. And the job of the Senate is to make sure, and the job, I guess the idea of having two houses is to make sure you don't have a rogue government, to make sure one government doesn't go tyrannical. Now, at state level in Queensland, we don't actually have two houses, so you can just consider that for a moment. So the winning of the election has nothing to do with the Senate or the upper house, but the Senate is probably the house of review. It is the highest court, if I can say that, of Australia. Now, it's a very different voting system there, whereas you have to live in an electorate. Like if I live in Longman, I can only vote in the lower house for people, for candidates in my electorate area, right? So the boundaries of that. However, when you're running in the Senate, you can vote for your senators, one of the six of them that are running on the 21st, anywhere in the state. Doesn't matter if you live at the top end or Coolangatta or Birdsville. Anyone can vote for a senator because the Senate covers the whole state. And senators sit a term of 6 years. That's it. Then they're up for re-election. Whereas a lower house member who gets in has a term of 3 years, and then we go back to the polls again. And what they do is they turn over six senators, so there's 12 in the states, and every 3 years, six of them are up for renewal. For example, in 2016, Pauline Hanson, Matt Canavan were elected. So 6 years later, they're up, and a few more, they're up for re-election. But people like Malcolm Roberts and Gerard Rennick, well, they were elected in 2019, so they're not up for re-election to 2025. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And just why would somebody who was going for a seat, why would they go for a Senate or upper house seat versus a lower house? Is there different roles that you have in your position there? Why did you make that decision to go for a senator seat?
Well, because I think Australia is unlawful. This was my driver for me personally. So whilst I represent the people, I was more interested in the remedy and the cure of fixing Australia. So if I wanted to be a people's representative, and I guess I am, but to focus on local issues, that would have distracted me from what I want to achieve. And if you go into the Senate, you have incredible, I'll use the word powers. I don't really like that word, but that's what it is, where you can pull anyone into the chamber. You can run Senate estimates. You can call anything, basically. You could call Morrison in there if you wanted to, the Governor General in there if you wanted to, and they could be held to account for their actions. They've got to explain it. And we see it today with the head of the TGA. You know, Skerritt's in there, Brendan Murphy. They don't like it. They get queasy. They get uncomfortable. But that's the job of a senator, to make sure that this country is not going down the wrong path and it is protecting its people and its resources. And right now, save for a few good senators, Gerard Rennick, Alex Antic in South Australia, Malcolm Roberts is speaking up, even in the lower house, George Christensen, there are very few that are interested. They go into the parliament with the ideal of working within it. They don't care to change it. It's working within it. Well, what I intend to do and what GAP, Great Australian Party, intends to do is to go in there, not to work in it, not to fix it, but to get rid of it and to bring us back under our rightful law, the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act of 1900, not the Australia Act that Bob Hawke and the Labor cronies put in place unlawfully, in my opinion, based on our evidence, in 1986. So the laws are written pursuant to that, not to our Commonwealth of Australia Constitution.
And just out of observation, I watch what Senator Rennick and Malcolm Roberts and that are doing in there, and they are putting some of these, you know, interesting organisations that do have a lot of power, like heads of APRA, TGA, etc., under incredible pressure. But there doesn't seem to be a hell of a lot of stuff coming out of it, because some of the evidence that they're putting forward is quite clear that there's been, you know, malpractice, maybe a word to use there, and wrongdoing, breaking laws could even be thrown in there. When and how do people get held to account through this whole process?
Well, through inquiry, or a Royal Commission, so under the 1902 Royal Commission. So what we would do without questions, one of our first things is, A, we'll get us back under the Commonwealth, because we will pull both houses. Well, we'll pull the Senate in, and we will provide all the evidence in the Senate. So 76 senators would get all the evidence, and they would act as the High Court. And they can decide, based on our evidence, which we think is overwhelming, that Australia is sitting unlawfully. And I've got evidence to prove that they would, because Rod Cullen did that very thing in 2017. So what would happen? That's what would happen in that particular case there. So we would provide the evidence. We would say, here, and you just need to look at the Commonwealth Constitution Review Act of 1988 with what it said. It's damning. It was done by an independent body. It is damning on the deceit and the lies that Labor and Liberal have done along the path to move us from our democratic constitution to what I would call a socialist border. They call it a republic, but it's not. In my opinion, that's just not true. Australia Act. So we would go in. First action is we would then roll that out. We would actually have this, and we would use the ABC. We don't want interviewers in there because I think investigative journalism in mainstream is kind of a dying art, in my opinion. We would let the cameras roll. So we would use the ABC, the national broadcaster, to roll without any interference from anyone, any political interference at all, or journalist interference, and just let the cameras record what was happening. The second thing we would do is create a Royal Commission into this because it's been a disgrace. And we would go after every single politician that's been part of this, which is the whole cabinet, in my opinion, the whole parliament. And we would do things like ask, well, let's have a look at your financial records prior to 20, you know, around about, I don't know, let's just put a line in the sand, we'd say June 2019 to current day. Let's just see what happens to your parties. We're keen to find out the financial infiltration that may have occurred in that particular case, because we know we've got money going in there because Clive Palmer has openly stated, and no one came after him and prosecuted him. He had no parliamentary privilege when he said tens of millions of dollars are being pumped in by lobbyists into the Liberal Party for these vaccines. And no one sued him because they know if they did, it would have to go to court and the evidence would have to come out. So Vera Jiklian and her lawyers have kept their mouth shut.
And he said he would go under oath, I believe, too, to make a statement. So pretty compelling, right. And good posture and a lot of conviction in his statement there. Just moving on, voting day. So there are a lot of people. I spent the last couple of weeks in Tasmania talking to people while I was down there. And like myself, was somebody that just walked in and we thought it was just an obligation to vote and it was just Liberal and Labor. So when we go into the voting booth, how do people vote and what are preferences? Because that's something new for someone like myself. How do they work? Because it's going to be important to be able to get the right people into power, especially if Labor and Liberal are now going to preference each other.
Yeah. It's a good question. Look, there's a guy named Topher Field who's actually running for the Senate in Tasmania. If you want a T-O-P-H-E-R Field, F-I-E-L-D, Topher Field, he's done some YouTube clips on this and they actually resonate with most people because he uses marbles to explain how preferencing works. So preferencing works both in the lower house when it comes to the lower house ticket is that short little portrait one you'll get with about 1 to 8 or 9, depending on how many people are running in your electorate. And then you've got the Senate. The Senate's like the tablecloth, the big white one that most people go, oh, what do I do with this thing? So let's just talk about the lower house for a moment. That's the short little portrait style DL one, right? So if there are eight candidates running in an electorate, just say it's your electorate, Craig, wherever that might be, what happens with preferencing is if you were number one, so you if you were number one on your ballot paper and you had me at number two and person C at number 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. What happens when you get knocked out? So if you're the first candidate with the lowest number of votes when all the counting's been done, you're eliminated. But your number two who people put down as number two on you, they then get your numbers. Yeah. And then when they get knocked out, their number twos get and so on. So basically the preferencing system says that whoever you have, so Craig, you get knocked out, you had 100 votes, but your number two, so all your votes, your number two goes to your number two, basically. And then the compound effect as you roll up the stream kind of works that way. It can be hard to explain in a short amount of time, which is why look at his videos because you just get it with the marbles. You go, oh, and it actually would work for us.
Yeah, so that's Topher Field, T-O-P-H-E-R-F-I-E-L-D. And yeah, he's done a video using marbles to visually explain that. And it's a really important thing to understand because your preferences are going to be really important to get the right people into power. I just want to ask a question about state government and federal government. Over the last 2 years, I've never seen anything more dysfunctional in my entire life, where you literally, it was like confusing, you know, that you had ScoMo coming out saying one thing, state governments saying bad luck, you know, we're doing what we want to do. How can Australia operate as a country under that type of arrangement?
Well, it can't, and we proved it. So that's what the Australia Act has done to Australia. It's given powers, it's given premiers more power than the Commonwealth. That's it. That's as hard as it needs to be. Get rid of the Australia Act, go back to the Commonwealth of Australia Constitution Act. These premiers don't have the powers they do. And let's just talk about what Morrison did. So here's evidence of where the Commonwealth can really work, where the, well, they call it, we are the Commonwealth, they call it the Australian government, their unlawful one. Daniel Andrews had the Belt and Road Initiative. Most people would have heard of that, dealing with China, and some universities were dealing direct with overseas countries as well. The Parliament of Australia wrote a law and implemented a law. Basically, it was passed. It went through the upper house, lower house three times and then got royal assent. We'll call it royal assent. It's not actually true royal assent, by the Governor General, and it was passed in law. And what that law said was that the states cannot deal directly with countries, essentially. There was more to it than that. And so what happens then is Daniel Andrews wants to deal directly with China. Well, guess what? You can't, because the water can't rise higher than its source. So the Commonwealth is the ultimate authority here in Australia when it comes to law. So if the states try to go above the Commonwealth, well, they can't, because it's they're basically in breach of 106, 107, 108, 109 of our Constitution, which doesn't allow them to. So that Belt and Road Initiative, ripped up, gone, see you later. And universities that were trying to do the same thing as well. My question to Scott Morrison and the Liberal Party has never changed from day one. Write a law in Australia. Make sure you get all your proper cronies to review it and do what you got to do, which says thou shall not mandate vaccines, and coercion is included in there. So they'd have to get very clever, because a lot of people, this garbage unemployment figure of 3.5 is not right, because a lot of people have lost their jobs because they refuse to line up for this vaccine. That is truth. And if they wrote a law which prevented the states and now corporate bodies from implementing it, forcing this on people, they would never have got it through. This would never have happened. But they chose not to, which is why we need to get into that garbage national cabinet, because that's where the lies have been told.
Mm. And do you see, you know, let's say a royal commission? Because one thing I've come highly frustrated with, there's been a number of court cases that have gone to court with overwhelming evidence, and you're like going, wow, that should stop the mandates. I think there was one with Brad Hazard, and, you know, they had all the doctors, all the evidence, and they exposed all the funding and all the, you know, under table things that had happened behind the scenes, but they still won. Like, how do we stop that process, and why aren't people being held to account?
Well, they will eventually. I dare say my confidence levels are high. I think they will eventually. In my opinion, I don't believe the courts have acted lawfully. Well, the mandates aren't lawful for a start. They're a gut feel, a directive based on a CHO order. Not once have they been lawful. The only way, there's many ways. The High Court of Australia is an option for them. However, if the High Court is not sitting lawfully as well, that creates another issue, as in they're sitting under the Queen of Australia, not our Commonwealth, which is where they should be. That's exact. And because if they're sitting under the Commonwealth of Australia, then the laws that they're assessing should be pursuant to the Constitution, but they're not. And this is the problem we have today. So there's a few that are dropping into the High Court now that the High Court will hear shortly. So once it's there, you can appeal to the full bench of the High Court, but that's essentially it. What I think that needs to happen is the solution, the remedy that Rod has been talking about and a lot of constitutional experts around Australia have been talking about, is get Australia back under its Commonwealth, because that solves this problem.
Yeah, and we've been talking with Jason Miles, who's running for the upcoming Senate for the Great Australian Party, and we've been talking a bit about how to vote, a bit of the history, the Constitution, why it's important. We're going to head over to a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about his vision, a bit about the Great Australian Party, and then, you know, how do we build a better future. So we have been with Jason Miles on TNT Radio.
The midterms and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Jeremy Beck.
Often voters ignore the primary elections and opt to vote only in the general election in November. But primary elections are very important for genuine democracy. If citizens fail to vote during the primary, the most qualified candidates could be eliminated, and the party hacks, backed up by big money, will end up on the ballot in November. The primaries for this year's midterm elections started in Texas on the 1st of March. All the rest are still to play out, with the next primaries scheduled for the 3rd of May in Indiana and Ohio. Civilization is at a critical turning point, and increased voter participation could shift the balance of power from the Wall Street banking oligarchy and military-industrial complex back to the people. The fake news media will cover the favourite establishment bankrolled candidates, but citizens can vote based on policy. I'm Jeremy Beck for TNT Radio.
I will be right by your side.
Women can have it all, including heart attacks. But symptoms like jaw pain, nausea, unusual fatigue, dizziness, and backache are often different and more subtle than for a man. The fact is, heart disease is the number one killer of women. Know the signs. Learn more at getheartchecked.org. From Women's Heart Alliance, in partnership with Women Heart.
Hi, I'm Charlize Theron with People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals. Almost all the puppies for sale at your local mall were churned out by breeding facilities called puppy mills.
Constant confinement drives the dogs mad. They are impregnated continually until they can no longer produce a litter.
If you choose a dog from the mall, a dog you could have saved from the pound will die.
Contact PETA to learn how you can make a difference at 757-622-PETA or visit PETA.org.
Where progress is influenced by revolution and evolution. This is today's News Talk Radio.
TNT.
TNT.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. We've been with Jason Miles talking all things the upcoming election. So you've shared a little bit about what you would like to see and what I guess the great Australian parties stand for. But it is the bedrock is around this constitution and holding people to account. You shared why you joined the party. Do you want to just share a little bit more about Great Australian Party and what you would like to personally see happen to help Australia return to the country that it should be?
Yeah, well, I'd love the people to be the authority and not the politicians. That's the first thing I would like, because we are the authority, not them. They're there to represent us. So for me, that's one. There's a couple of things I would love to see immediately. So we've got to stop this from ever happening again, right? So we need to resolve the current issue, which is clearly what we're focusing on with our remedy. But we can also do other things as well. We don't currently have a circuit breaker in government at all. The Governor General of Australia is meant to serve the people of Australia. He's the Queen's authority. And let's not think about a lady sitting on a throne, right? Let's just talk about the monarch as the lawful authority. That's where we get our laws from. It's the authority. So forget about whether it's Queen Elizabeth or King George before that, or Queen Victoria. It doesn't matter. Just forget the Queen in that regard, not in a disrespectful way, but that is the authority with which our power comes from, right? Our authority comes from. So what we would do is put a circuit breaker in there, because right now the Governor General, in our opinion, is not doing his job. So he's a political appointment, and what we need is a people's elected Governor General that can pull the pin or pull the trigger, so to speak, when enough people, whatever that number is we agree on, say, you know what, we're sick of this government, get them out, get rid of them. So that's the first thing we should consider, and the people of Australia should decide, because that would have to be by way of constitution, I would think. Might be able to get around it, I'm not sure, but that's the first thing I would do as well. The second thing we are massive on, and Labor destroyed Australia with its primary industries. If people haven't heard of the Lima Declaration, I would highly recommend everybody researches that. And it's not just Labor, it's actually Liberal as well, because Fraser was in power when that was put in place and he did nothing to fix it, as did subsequent Liberal or coalition prime ministers as well. So we lost about 90% of our manufacturing onshore, and we sent it to third world countries. So jobs, money, innovation, technology, gone. See you later. And that was because of, back then, the New World Order wasn't a surprise. It's language they've been using for a long time. And so they wanted to force this one world order, this New World Order. And so, well, what better way to do it than to take control of your assets and your industry? So Australia pretty much tipped them all overseas, into third world countries. probably big corporates who run them over there screaming in the millions, making a lot because they, you know, they pay 30 US cents a day and we get the luxury of buying it back. Same with our fuel as well. We had about 30 perfectly functioning fuel. Oil wells around Australia. And then, you know, OPEC comes along and we sell it through Singapore and we buy it back. And, well, let me ask you, Craig, how well is that going for you today at the Bowser? Not very well at all. Australia is a resource-rich country. We can be self-sufficient. We can also be a good global citizen. Absolutely, we can. But we cannot continue doing what we're doing by giving up the sovereignty of our country. And that's exactly what these two parties have done. They've sold Australia out. Absolutely. So we bring back jobs. And I know Clive's thinking the same thing, probably One Nation's thinking the same thing, IMOP, you know, Australian Federation. A lot of these other parties are saying the same thing. Yet the two that we need, because they've got this system they created, this two-party preferred system, which is what we're trying to break, they're the ones that really should be doing it, yet they've never attempted to do it, not least in my lifetime. So they're the things we would bring back immediately. We'd get our assets, some of these public assets that have been sold off, electricity sold off in the name of, you know, competition, better prices. Well, I reckon the average Australian would be going, are you seriously kidding me? How well, I'm not better off under this at all. In fact, I'm paying fortune for this. And now with all the climate skeptics going, all the climate people out there really pushing for alternatives, which is great as long as you have a transition plan and the lights stay on, I'm okay with that. But I haven't seen one that keeps the lights on, at least not that's going to be dropping anytime soon. And then your water's the other one. Like, how well is that going for us? We privatised that to an extent and now we're paying excessive amounts for a God-given right, the water. I get the fact you should have controls and regulations around them, but we're not paying any less. So we would do a lot of things to decentralize models, put more shipping channels up and down the coast, so make it easier to get in and out of ports, not 700 kilometers as it is now between certain ports. So bring it all back into Australia, use the resources within our country because it is for the common wealth, the common person. That's the extent. And we'd have a sovereign bank as well. And we would use that for the people. So people could buy their homes and not be bound to these banks that make billions and billions of dollars profit on the back of us when, in fact, we are a rich enough country to support the people of this country.
Mm. And you just mentioned something there that just, we vote people in, you know, that politicians are voted in by the people for the people. But as you just mentioned there, you've got a lot of these parties that, you know, some people like to use words alternate or freedom or whatever you want to, that they're actually standing for our country and our people. But the two majors are actually nearly polar opposite to that. They're answering to organizations like Pfizer and, you know, investing millions of dollars into vaccines, selling all our assets overseas. And they seem to be very much controlled by World Health Organizations, World Economic Forums. You see Alex Antic and George Christensen talking about this in the parliament all the time. Is it actually possible to even break ties with these type of organizations that seem to have a horrible amount of influence over what we do and what we eat and what we breathe and what we drink in this country?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're stripping our sovereignty away. It's like I said earlier. And the thing with these parties like Great Australian Party is that we are for, from, and by the people and the country. That's it. And that's our goal. We want that back. Labor and Liberal are very much all about the party. And there's very few of them that have a conscious vote. Like I spoke on Saturday night in Springwood, an event, and Matt Canavan was there. Like, he's a current sitting senator for the LNP. And he's one of them that's actually had the decency to have a conscious vote. We saw Kelly resign from the Liberal Party, which was great. George Christensen, absolutely love him. Incredibly outspoken. Antic's the same. Rennick's the same. But the Prime Minister would hate them because they're not towing the party line. And this is the thing. When these well-intentioned people go into politics, they do it because they think, I want to change the country. Oh, I'll join a party. When basically what happens then is the faceless men and women that control that party dictate what they say yes to. The ayes and nays in the parliament, they say yes and no to this. So, yes, we can get out of treaties. 100% we can get out of them. They put us into it. We get out of them. Again, it doesn't mean not being a good global citizen, Craig. It just means that not at the expense of the people and Australia. It cannot. That is our priority. This is our country. Look after our own first. When I travel around Queensland, and I travel around Queensland all the time, Craig, I've done more kilometres than the early settlers with this campaigning in the last 18 months. I've witnessed, and I say caravan parks, I've witnessed mums in cars and their kids in tents. And Rod's witnessed the same thing as well. Over 55-year-old women is the fastest growing demographic of homelessness in Australia. Where and when did that happen to our country? Yeah, we're giving millions and millions away offshore to other countries to help them. You know what? Foreign aid, as I don't know who it was the other night on that panel, but foreign aid needs to happen here in Australia because we got people who are on the brink. I've had three people were going to kill themselves that I reached out to over the last 18 months and I spoke with them and fortunately talked them down. That's three. I'm one bloke. And there's probably 100 more I missed. And for every me, there's probably another 60 or 70 of us in each state trying to do the same thing. That is the crisis. That is the crisis.
I would say right now, just the country all round is in a mess. You know, we have laws that are, you know, oh, we're back. Our freedoms are being given back to us, but you still can't be a school teacher. You know, that the school teacher can actually take their kids to school and not be impacted. So the school system's broke. There's human rights. What are they anymore? Government spending, as you just mentioned there, we should be not putting $70 million into foreign aid and leaving our own countrymen, you know, sleeping on park benches. All of these things. And most importantly, I believe that oversight and checks and balances have been really missed here. Like if you were a CEO of a big business, you have got accountability. You've got a board to say, hey, you've just cost us millions of dollars. You're gone. You know, right. You resign or you are sacked. Here, we've got spending that's out of control with zero accountability. So right now we need people like Jason into these roles to put some more checks and balances in place. I just want to touch on one thing that's a big bugbear for me, and I think opportunities really risen from this, and TNT Radio and places like these independent medias have been massively important because someone like you that's passionate about the country gets on social media or wants to speak in the mainstream media and you get censored or your voice or the media attacks you and says, oh, look at these crazy people. Do you want to just touch on how you believe the media's operated over the last couple of years and in the government as well?
Well, I would say that whatever Murdoch wants, Morrison gives him, basically. So in February 2020, when Morrison gave 100% tax breaks to mainstream media to amplify the pandemic, we weren't even locked down by then, right? And in fact, Morrison was saying the opposite in March. Oh, I don't think we need to lock down. Then why would you do what you did in February for a start? The mainstream media has lost credibility. I think most people know that anyway, but because we've become so indoctrinated into that rectangle thing on our wall, it is just a habit and it's a really bad habit. Australia needs a decent mainstream media. We need investigative journalists. We don't need people repeating the rhetoric. What we would do is create quite a few different laws around what the media can and can't, like censorship. I mean, it's just, you know, you look at the left now, they're absolutely crapping their pants over what Elon Musk is maybe doing. They don't even know. We don't even know what Elon Musk may do. But all of a sudden, there's this massive uprising. Oh, my God, he's going to allow free speech. Oh, did we say that out loud? Going to allow free speech. The only time that I've been approached by the media was when I've been at rallies. And when I was pretty much before I really got into the political campaigning. And then when I wanted to talk with them after my profile started getting bigger, of course, they didn't want to know me back then, by the way, but when I got bigger, they then wanted to start talking to me. And I've just gone, no, I refuse to now. And the ABC were chasing me the other day over a comment I'd made on my Facebook page. And it was around debunking a story that I'd put up. It wasn't 100% factual. It was 99.5% factual, but not 100% according to them. They're not exactly their words, I'm paraphrasing. My comment to the ABC was, before you come after me, look at all the good work we do, but maybe go to Greg Hunt and ask him what a lie looks like, because I'm pretty sure this same guy said to us, it's safe and effective. So safe, your nonna can take it. Well, go tell that to the 120,000 people that are sitting on the adverse events register in the DANES database at the TGA, or the 885 deaths that have been reported. And even the 15, the TGA have said, well, this is actually the number, whatever the number is. I think it's 15 at the moment. And that figure is understated by a number of 5 to 31. Now, we lose 2.4 people a year to vaccine deaths. And even if the TGA was right at 15, That's too many. That's far too many. And we know it's underreported by a factor of 5 to 31, because it's their data.
Yeah. And look, I think, you know, media and social media and, you know, that they're really powerful on the narrative. And again, like the journalists, you mentioned investigative journalists actually go to and don't even ask the hard questions. You know, I remember when the PCR test was at one time in the whole first 18 months, a media person asked Brett Sutton, they said, the US are going to get rid of the PCR test. And he came out and he goes, well, the experts say that that's the gold standard, you know, and you like go one hard question and you still can't even answer it. But just on this, well,
can I just say, Rachel Baxendale was probably the standout for me. And then obviously Credlin got involved a bit later on, but I mean, I'm not a fan of the Australian. I don't advocate any of them, but she was the only one that would ask. I remember when Dan Andrews said one day, well, I just don't know what they're protesting about, you know, and she went, you. That was it. One answer. I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. And just on that, that'll be my last question. But we also see these unelected bureaucrats showing up in these roles, like chief health officers. They're not elected by the people, but they have so much power over the people. Would you like to see some sort of checks and balances put into that part of the process? You mentioned earlier on that you'd like maybe even financial records to see whether there's, you know, outside influence being put into these people as well, because there are a lot of politicians that are extremely wealthy but have really gone from university into politics. And last time I looked at their salaries, they weren't exactly representative of billionaires. That might be stretching it a bit much, but what would you like to see there?
Well, total filtration of the whole thing. So this is the beauty of a Royal Commission. You get to actually, you get to do the terms of reference, and this is one area that we just have to, we just got to filtrate. We've got to make sure we get our forensic people into that and go, you know what, tell us where the pain points are, dive into it, find out who pulled the trigger, like Daniel Andrews. I mean, seriously, that whole Coates inquiry was just the most staged thing I've ever witnessed in my life. You know, taxpayer funded. Of course it was taxpayer funded. His solicitors were taxpayer funded. The whole thing was a rort. So you need, what we need in the Royal Commission terms of reference is to make sure every single person that has played an active role in this, and I mean every person, this could take 20 years, but we need to knock the big ones off first. But every single person that's been complicit in this needs to be held to account. And they need to be held to account to international laws, if they're Nuremberg Code, that sort of stuff as well, because some of this stuff has caused deaths. Daniel Andrews, 801 deaths, bang. Now, there's not an Australian that would be walking on the streets if they did what he did and was responsible for 801 deaths by lying to the Australian people.
Absolutely. And just finally, you mentioned you've been to rallies and speaking out. And what do you see on the groundswell of people? Just, you know, you speak to people on a daily basis, you tour around speaking to people. How do you feel the Australian people actually feel? Because if you didn't know and you looked at the media, there is just this Labor Liberal, you know, everyone's either Labor, everyone's all either Liberal. What do you actually see when you're talking to genuine everyday Australians?
Frustration. So, and I speak to a lot, even in the Brisbane rallies, I actually pull off when I'm in the crowd and I'll go talk to the people on the street, you know, workers having lunch, and I'll say to them, do you know what they're protesting about? And this was about the bill, you know, the state of emergency. They're going, no. And you'd explain it to them. They go, oh yeah, I didn't really like that either. Like, I didn't understand it. And then you ask them a question. You'd say, well, how do you feel about state, how do you feel about Palaszczuk? And I've come across two, actually. I'll take that back. I do remember two that actually supported it. But London to a brick, there's 98% of the people I talk to cannot stand politicians. They're apathetic about them. And here's the flip of it. Of course, they suddenly treated them as gods in 2020, which kind of, you know, that surprised me. So the general feel on the ground is people have had a gutful, and I don't mean just in the freedom movement. I mean, generally speaking, people have had a gutful of being these government politicians being in your face. They're just everywhere. They're in every reach of your life, and people are sick of it. Get out of our lives. That's the feel.
And we've been with Jason Miles. We've come to the end of the show. I just want to wish you good luck for the upcoming election in a few weeks' time, and just keep on campaigning, and make sure if you see Jason's name pop up on the Senate card in Queensland, you put him number one, because he really is standing for our freedom, our constitution, our democracy, and a better world. So we've been Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. My name's Craig Schultz, the host, and we'll see you again next week on TNT Radio.